our Christian ministry, I will take the opportunity of welcoming everybody who's there in the meeting. Welcome to all of you. And we are going to start the meeting now. We will be having today a briefing by the Department of Police on violence against children and women. We'll be dealing with equal trauma, homicide, child murder. And they will also do the implementation of some of the legislation that has been passed under the Domestic Violence Act, Child Justice Act, and the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act. I don't know whether they have any documents with them. Actually, we don't have documents. But we will be referring to members.
Madam Chair, we have a presentation. They are in the process of printing it for us. We will make it available to the committee members. But at this stage, we will also give an electronic copy to the secretary of the committee if that is finally with the chair.
We have a questionable number. How are you going to follow? You are saying that your staff is talking in the center. Could I then say, taking into account the child language is having a hard copy in front of us, could we start with the child life and then after we move to the police, are you finding that? We all have the agenda in front of us. I'd love to start when it's just quiet so that we can follow. I know the room is a bit squeezy. Could you then introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and then we'll go to the second item of the agenda. That's the first time we'll go to the second item of the agenda. And may I once more welcome those who have not welcomed. I see there are some members who have just walked in now. Welcome to the committee. We will look forward to your contribution. Adding value to the committee. Obviously, you can write the things that you are coming to you. Thank you. Obviously.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the committee. My name is Junice Lenana. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Child and South Africa. And our office is based in Zambia. Good morning.
are very grateful for this opportunity to come and talk to you this morning. I am the manager for advocacy and change in the medical office of Childline. And because Dumi is suffering from an continual stroke this morning, I will be presenting on our behalf. We are a national organization. Our national office is in Durban for a number of reasons. Vivian and Tal probably face the most challenges in relation to children and children's services, and also the problems that have the most children. But just to say, we're a registered non-profit and public benefit organization which through its 9 provincial offices provides the following services. We have a toll-free telephone crisis service which receives calls on issues and problems relating to physical, emotional, sexual abuse, poverty, neglect, child pornography, abuse by educators, around which we're getting an enormous number of calls at the moment, abandonment, HIV/AIDS, relationship problems, and so on. I just want to say that the number of problems that children phone us about, the challenges that they have in their lives, is almost infinite. And we just talk to children and listen and refer, assist, and counsel through this line. It's a very important preventative as well as a remedial service through which we refer children to face-to-face services, some of which we run ourselves, some of which are run by government, some of which are run by other NGOs. During 2008, our call centres across the country, we have one in every province, received almost a million calls and referred over 25,000 children to face-to-face services. So we do talk to an enormous number of children. Just to say, we have provincial call centres because the services that impact the most on children's lives are provincialised. Education, health, and service development are provincial own affairs. Also, languages differ from province to province, apart from services. So when a child phones our call centre, they speak usually to a person, a counsellor, who speaks their own language. So in Limpopo, for example, it's Zenda, Swana, and Limpopo has the most complex language structure. In KwaZulu-Natal, it would be Zulu in English. We're often asked who phones the crisis line. We deal disproportionately with children who are disadvantaged and cannot access any other counseling service. So about 92% of children who phone us are Black African, and the other percentage varies across the other groups. Just to say, also, it's sometimes very difficult to know much about the background of the child on a telephone counseling service. So often, if the child does not respond to the counselor who asks the question, we can't always record that. We also run child abuse prevention and education programs in schools. These provide information on children's rights, child abuse, HIV/AIDS, responsible relationships, and sexual behavior. And last year, we worked with about 300,000 children through school programs. We train volunteers to help us with our service provision. We do an enormous amount of networking and coordination of services with partner NGOs and government bodies, because unfortunately, services to children in this country are very uncoordinated at the moment. We do a lot of advocacy around children's rights. This involves monitoring legislation and policy and the implementation of this. And in some of our provincial offices, there are additional services. For example, treatment services to abused children and their families. Again, these services tend to be used by children who have no other access to any other therapeutic resource. We do a lot of course preparation across the provinces. This is offered to abused children who have to testify in criminal courts. Some of our provinces provide safe emergency care for children in need of immediate particular program. We tend to, the communities we serve, we offer services throughout the country in every province, but our services mainly target children in situations of disadvantage who cannot access any other services that would address their needs and problems. The beneficiaries of our programs are therefore children and families who can't afford other services in the field of child protection mainly. The National Office is based in Durban. Our role as the National Office is capacity building for service delivery at provincial level, national and international networking. We are training other child lines and providing them with visits of observation from all the SADC countries next week, no, week after next, we're hosting a Nigerian team who want to set up a child helpline in Nigeria. There's 128 million people in the country who need a child line. We also, at the national level, monitor the implementation of law and policy across South Africa. We analyze, comment, and participate in the development of law and policy. In actual fact, I chair the SA Law Reform Commission Project Committee on Sexual Offences, and as an organization, we were very, very participant in the development of the Children's Act and the Child Justice Act. We also flag national issues relating to children in national forums. And the National Office has just started a new project. I'm sure you all read about Mexico in the press. And what they have done now is, in order to try and look at issues in relation to, it's not just Mexico's problem, but all our social networking, we've opened a chat room counseling facility for children through the National Office. The most amazing program. Our first year, we're completely unfunded, so we're doing it as an experimental project initially, and I'm just so taken aback by the fact that from the day this chat room counseling service opened, we have been inundated. We have queues of up to 21 children at a time waiting in a chat room queue to speak to counselors. And most of the things that they're talking about are things like sexual abuse, sexual behavior, and interestingly enough, self-mutilating behaviors amongst teens. And it's attracting children from all population groups. And we're very challenged. We did not expect this kind of response to opening this particular facility. We also do email counseling as well through our website. And as many donors are rolling out access to the internet in schools, even rural schools, our email counseling is becoming increasingly important. We also in the National Office coordinate and interpret data collection relating to child mind services on the national level. We've got a data collection program attached to our call center, and it's being rolled out to capture information from our other services. That is why we can give you some very specific information about what children are telephoning us about, and hopefully when it's rolled out to our other services, other concerns that children are talking to us about. I've included some information here on a number of children in South Africa, which I find absolutely fascinating in terms of where services are most needed. The slide on children living in income poverty is very, very concerning in that 67.7% of our children are living in a situation of income poverty. This comes from Central Africa. And you can see that this figure is highest in Limpopo and lowest in Western Cape. And I'm often asked about services across the province. Well, if you're an abused child in South Africa, please God you're not abused in Limpopo. And hopefully, if you can organize where you're going to be abused, it should be in the Western Cape, because this is where we have the highest concentration of services for children. But the problem, you know, we have an equality clause in our constitution. And on a personal level, it drives me crazy to see how disparate the situation of children is across this country. And unfortunately, it's the historically disadvantaged children who remain the most disadvantaged children in this country. And I think this provides this committee with a massive challenge. I know we're very challenged by it as an organization, and I feel passionate about trying to get services to children who've never had services. 2007, it's absolutely clear that even before the recession kicked in, we had declining employment in this country and this impact on children's lives. If a child is living in a household that only has granted income, you can be sure that that child is seriously disadvantaged materially. You can reflect on the provincial differences there. Then, of course, we have the issue with infant mortality, highest in Cape Town, followed by Eastern Cape. This, of course, relates to the HIV-AIDS pandemic, and follows the HIV-AIDS pandemic infection rate. But as pointed out, I think quite frequently in our press over the last 6 months, we're one of the only countries, few countries left in the world with an increasing infant and child mortality rate as a result of the pandemic. And again, a huge challenge for ourselves and this committee. Of huge concern also, because education is a way of uplifting children and families out of poverty. We see huge provincial disparities in school performance and school facilities. Performance in this graph is measured by the percentage of children who achieve 50%, 60% literacy, not 100% literacy, 50% literacy. And if you look across the provinces, Eastern Cape is extremely low. Limpopo is embarrassingly low. Whereas Western Cape and Northern Cape, interestingly, and Gauteng have the highest performance levels. If you look at how many schools have libraries across the provinces, again, it is a situation where you can see where there is provincial advantage and provincial disadvantage. Sanitation facilities in schools and throughput. Throughput relates to the number of children who actually get to and complete grade 9. Big provincial disparity. And, you know, it begs the question, because we see this with social development as well, whether some of these things should be provincial competencies when you see such huge provincial disparities. And I think that this debate does need to be reopened in terms of how do we equalize facilities for children across the country, and how do we give every child an equal opportunity with regard to living, surviving, education, health, and so on. Just looking at some of our statistics from 2008 that came through our crisis line, I thought you might be interested in looking at these. We see over 100%, we see 100% increase in reported physical abuse across our network, and emotional abuse as well. Now, it's interesting to us that children, even children living in poverty, are telling us about emotional abuse. But it's obviously of huge concern to many of the children who phone our helpline. We see a decrease in reported sexual abuse to the helpline, but an increase, and I haven't got the figures finalized as yet because I haven't got all our annual reports from our provincial offices for 2008. Although sexual abuse, the reports have declined on our crisis line, an overview of the reports that I do have from our offices indicates an increase in reports of sexual abuse to our treatment services. So although at first sight that crisis line figure looks promising, the figures coming from our treatment centres are not. And neglect, we see an increase in neglect across the last 3 years. Now, it's difficult to know whether or not these are real increases in the situation of children. It's probably a combination of children knowing that they have the right to report to the helpline, knowing who to report to, because we do advertise. I'm sure some of you have seen our advertisements on television and in the press, which we are very kindly given ProDeo. I mean, an organization like ours can't afford R50,000 for a single flight in an advertisement. So we're very grateful to SABC TV2 who do flight some of our adverts and ETV. The children see this, they know who to report to, but the jumps are so great that we wonder if we're not dealing with a real increase as well. I've given a category breakdown of involved in two or three parenting projects because we believe that the home is the first line of child protection. And so we're doing a lot of work with the parents and caregivers of children. Whenever I use the term parents, I'm not necessarily talking about biological parents. I'm including those who've taken on the task of parenting of children who are not their biological children. If you move down to commercial exploitation, we see 261 calls about children who are being commercially exploited. Domestic labour being the highest area of commercial exploitation of children. Higher than prostitution, etc. But I just want to say one thing. A lot of children involved in prostitution are involved in prostitution as a survival activity. They are not the children who report to us. These children don't report to us. They report to us their bread and butter. In fact, it's probably not even their butter. It's probably just their bread. And many of the children we come across are supporting siblings as well. And we've recently done a treatment camp for abused children in the northern part of Limpopo, where children can't get into our treatment services. And the saddest thing for us was a very high proportion of girls between the ages of 15 and 18 who were obviously involved in sex for food, sex for shelter, sex for clothes, and who really did not feel they were being sexually exploited. For them, it was survival. And I just want to note that the child support grant stops at 15. And we have nothing to offer these girls. Nothing at all. Yeah, and there was a couple of boys also involved in this kind of behavior as well. Yes, it's illegal. Yes, it's reported. Children will not give statements because it cuts off their means of survival. And as an organization, we are very challenged as to how we deal with this. It's all very well to be judgmental about these children, but how often are they going to survive? In the remote regions of Limpopo, there is nothing to help these children. Disability, I thought you would be interested in disability. We had 162 calls about disability issues. I think so this does underrepresent the problem of disability as it impacts on children's lives. We had 54 calls about discrimination. Going down to family relations and homelessness. Lost my place there. We had, where am I? Okay, we had 1,489 calls about family relationships. Most of which relate to conflict between parents, 572 calls. And I think sometimes we forget how distressed children become when parents are not able to get on with the task of parenting without involving children in their own battles. And we get many calls about children who are used as weapons of war by their parents. Homelessness, we had 424 calls about homeless children. HIV and AIDS, now this is a very problematic category because there is still such a stigma attached to HIV and AIDS, and we have been now working with the Senate Law and Human Rights Sector Task Team on the issue of stigma. Many children whose lives are affected by HIV and AIDS don't know that their parents have died because of AIDS or are ill because of AIDS. So children whose lives are affected by HIV and AIDS are usually phoning us about poverty, lack of food, lack of shelter, and so on, the kind of aftermath of the death of a parent. And so one needs to look at these figures with this in mind. And our counselors in counseling children cannot say to a child, did your parents die of AIDS? Because for many children this would be a too difficult a question to respond to. And even if they knew, they might not feel that they can disclose that in a telephone counseling conversation. So it is important to look at this particular statistic with a high level of, it doesn't accurately reflect the problem. We had 991 calls about legal issues, custody, access, maintenance. Maintenance is a huge issue. Our maintenance calls are simply not working. It is really a are being implemented in a way that really is child protected. Neglect is a very big issue. We have 3,883 calls around neglect and 1,473 calls around poverty, children starving, no income, and so on. Physical health, we have 267 calls around physical health. And we have, interestingly enough, 649 calls around psychological health. And that is, for me, very interesting that children and adults with concerns about children do actually learn about these kinds of issues as well. Depression being the highest category of call in relation to psychological health. Sexuality issues. We really try and train our counselors well to deal with sexuality issues because we believe that if we do good preventative work here, and it's not this is our crisis line work, but the work in schools, we get a lot of requests to talk around sexuality issues. We really believe that if we can help children grow up with an appropriate sense of what is responsible sexual behavior, we'll do much to prevent sexual violence in the next generation. So we welcome calls from children on sexuality issues. However, if you look at this, about 170 of those calls, almost half of them are on children burning because they are pregnant or think they are pregnant. And with our chatting counseling and our email counseling, we get quite a high number of children contacting us over issues of pregnancy. School problems, total, we had 595 calls around school problems. This does not include children who phone as a result of sexual abuse at school. These are other school problems. And if you look down this list, we still have calls about money for school fees, which is obviously still preventing children in some instances from accessing their education, learning problems, and even though corporal punishment in schools is banned in this country, we are still getting calls about corporal punishment. Substance abuse, very high. 904 calls about substance abuse, with many children phoning in because of their parents' alcohol or alcohol use. 413 calls about parental alcohol use. We also get calls about from refugee children as well. I'd like to share with you some of the challenges we face. We now comparatively have some of the best legislation in the world. It's just simply not being implemented. The Children's Act was passed in 2005, the first half. It's still not implemented. Only 50 sections of 300 sections are implemented. And my question is, how long must children wait? 4 years is a quarter of a child's childhood. What happens to children while they are waiting for us to implement legislation? The Child Protection Protocol was finalized in 1999 when Minister Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi was head of the Social Development Department. Those protocols are not being implemented. It means that it's pot luck as to how child abuse is dealt with in many of our provinces. I think this is a very big challenge, and I think I implore the committee to see what they can do about this. The Children's Act is a developmental piece of legislation. It looks at children holistically. It tries to prevent the ills that plague our children's lives. The failure to implement it does not augur well for the position of our children and improving that. Another challenge is that we need further law reform. Some of the decisions made during the law reform process, despite the active advocacy from people who work with children on the ground, were not child friendly. And I'm going to point out three their property unprotected. To avoid the curator bonus, to protect a child's property takes 4 months, by which time the property has been distributed amongst the neighbours, people have moved into the children's home, and the children have lost. The other issue is children cannot access the High Court from rural areas. Our High Courts are urban-based. We beg for guardianship and protection of children's property to devolve to the Children's Court, which is far more accessible. I cannot tell you the number of calls we get about this particular issue, and we cannot do anything about it, because the law says guardianship, protection of property, High Court responsibility. Then the new Criminal Law of Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act number 32 of 2007. I want to tell you something about the history of this piece of legislation. After the first draft and the first public hearings that were held in September 2003 at 1 day's notice, obviously only the people in the Western Cape could attend those public hearings, there were no further public hearings on this piece of legislation. Consequently, people made decisions about the new Sexual Offences Act that are not always child victim friendly. One of the things we beg and plead for from the children's sector is, please can every child have access to the intermediary system, which protects the child from having to testify in an open courtroom. However, the powers that be decided otherwise. We appealed this through the Peshwari matter in the High Court. It went all the way to the Constitutional Court. The Department of Justice opposed rolling out the intermediary system for every child. And unfortunately, I think the Constitutional Court judgment, again, does not deal with equal protection for every child victim. I don't know how many of you have had to testify in court, but if you're a girl of 13 who's been raped, and you've got, maybe even by your own father, and you've got to go to court and you've got to stand up in that court with your father present and testify maybe to 2 or 3 years of ongoing sexual abuse, it is seriously traumatic. And what breaks my heart is that you have children come out of court and say, that's what's worse than the abuse itself. There's something seriously wrong with the system that does this to children. It's hard enough for adults, and adults feel very traumatized, but for children it is breaking. Then the other thing that I'd like to mention is the duplicated registers of people unfit to work with children. When we sat on the Sexual Offences Committee in the South African Law Reform Commission, the committee chairs dealing with the Child Justice Act, the Children's Act, and the Sexual Offences, the new Sexual Offences Act, I'm not going to give you the whole title, we liaised with each other to make sure there was no overlap between those pieces of legislation. The register in the Children's Act is very good, and it's more inclusive than the register in the Sexual Offences Act. So what we requested is that we have a register in the Children's Act. However, the powers that be decided that we would have 2 registers. Registers are extremely expensive. In a country in which only 1 in 9 children report abuse, and of those 1 in 9, we have a 4-6% conviction rate, regardless of what we're told about the Sexual Offences Court, which I can speak to later. Only 0.5% of all offenders are going to appear on a sexual offenders register. So, it means that the registers will only capture a minute proportion of people who prey on children. Why are we having 2? What a waste of resources. The flip side of that is organizations like Childline, which are really challenged in terms of resources. We'll have to now screen every staff member against and every volunteer against 2 registers. The Department of Education, every teacher, 2 registers. Every policeman, 2 registers. Look at the wastage of time. I really appeal to the Women's Children and Disability Committee to look at this issue and see how it can be resolved. It was a political decision. It was, to my mind, it's not logical. life of the Child Protection Unit, and I'm glad that you are here, this so-called decentralization occurs without consultation with the other sectors in the child protection system. It was just presented as a safer country. There's good research on the impact that this has had on the management of child abuse by SAS, and it has contributed to the failure of many reports and investigations. Working with children is a specialized skill. If the specialized units are reintroduced, we appeal to the ministry to rework and re-establish the child protection protocols that set out the roles and responsibilities of all sectors involved in the management of child abuse, including the police, health, justice, and constitutional development, social development, civil society organizations, and so on. What was interesting to us is that the police were part of the original development of the protocol, which then their decision completely trashed. And it was a unilateral decision. The National Child Protection Committee, on which I'm sitting and on which the police sat, there was no discussion at this level about the decision before it was made. And even the police who attend that committee, I think, were somewhat uncomfortable about the decision. We also need to ensure that members of the special units, if they are re-established, are trained and selected for their suitability to work with children, trained, mentored, and debriefed. Last week, Childline was doing intersector training on child abuse in Pietermaritzburg, the committee chair's hometown. And the saddest thing for me was to sit and listen to the police trainees in a group say, we are absolutely emotionally stressed by the work that we deal with. No one debriefs us. No one helps us deal with the impact of the child rapes that we have to deal with on our own lives. And debriefing should be part and parcel of every child protection worker's working life. I want to also talk about the challenge that has resulted as a result of the effort to reduce crime statistics. For the past 3 years, Childline has had numerous reports of children and adults with children attempting to report sexual abuse to police stations being turned away. One provincial police commissioner noted to me in a meeting, and I won't name him because I don't want to embarrass him, the target of 10% reduction in rapes annually is impossible to achieve. The only way we can do it is to turn victims away, and this is what some police stations have been doing. Telling parents that their children will be traumatized by the criminal justice process, that they can do nothing if the child is too young to testify, which is not the role of the police to determine. Not only when this happens does the child lose access to justice, but there is also the problem of the denial of health care and the provision of post-exposure prophylaxis as the police open the door to this service. If a raped child is turned away from a police station, you can be pretty sure that child will not get to a health facility because there is no reason for a sexual assault examination. So turning victims away from police stations has not only an impact on the child's right to justice and protection, but the health issues as well. If our police services were working effectively, we would be addressing that 1 in 9. Of children who report. Our police should be aiming for an increase in reported rape, not a decrease, because it would prove that the communities have restored confidence in their policing services. Generally, we see a deterioration in service delivery. Health services are overwhelmed by the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Social development, social workers are busy with orphan care. As a result, few children who require the protection and services of the child protection system are produced receive an acceptable level of service. The work overload and the lack of appropriate work ethic and supervision in some instances also contribute to poor service delivery. The shortage of social workers means that people get into supervisory positions before they have experience and proper training on the ground. We see children who are really inappropriately dealt with. I want to also mention the FIFA World Cup and the focus on trafficking and school closures. Without consultation with the children's sector, the cabinet made a decision to close schools for the entire duration of the World Cup. 4.5 weeks of school holiday in the middle of the school year, when few parents and caregivers will be able to take leave and will struggle with childcare. not have access to school feeding during this period. This creates the very conditions that make children vulnerable to all forms of abuse and exploitation, including being trafficked. Trafficking appears to be the main focus of preventive activity leading up to and during World Cup. But we're not addressing the conditions that promote and create vulnerability to trafficking. It's like closing the stable door after the horse has run away. The lack of resources and the unequal distribution of resources, childline services are seriously underfunded, particularly in the civil society, children's services are seriously underfunded, particularly in the civil society sector, which provides over 60% of child protection services to children in South Africa. State social workers are paid far higher salaries with which the private sector cannot compete. So what we see happening is we get the new graduates out of university, we train them in the actual practice, often help them get their private licenses, and then they move to state and we cannot compete with these salary levels. The reception is a challenge. It's increased the vulnerability of children to exploitation, neglect, hunger, and homelessness, and it's increased the need for services. However, there are less resources for services. One has to remember that the reception increases the need for services, but the problem is that corporate social responsibility programs have less money because of reduced profits. Corporate social responsibility programs are often related to profit margins. So we see increasing need, decreasing resources. Another challenge, and I'd love this committee to track, is budgeting and implementation of the Children's Act is not only unequal across the provinces, but inadequate across all the provinces. At the lowest level of implementation, the budget is less than 50% of what is required on average across the provinces. However, what is a concern is the failure of some provincial departments of social development to spend their budget. KZN, Department of Social Development, returned 49% of their HIV and AIDS budget to tertiary in the last financial year. Should we not feel embarrassed? This is the province in which the HIV AIDS pandemic is galloping. We also see a lack of equality in provisioning across the provinces. The expenditure per capita on children's services in child protection varies enormously from 185 rand per child in the Zikwe to 39 rand in Limpopo. What happened to the equality clause in our constitution when you see a figure like that? We also see a lack of equality in subsidies to non-profits across the provinces. This contributes to a lack of stability in staff and services. Too much attention and resources also are given to campaigns. And I'm going to be blunt here, usually used by politicians for political posturing. I'm tired of cats and t-shirts. Could we not feed our children? Please excuse my bluntness. These have little impact and impact bleed resources away from the provisioning of service delivery. The 16 days of activism is particularly difficult for children's services as it begins at a time when schools, which provide a second safety net for children after the family, are closing. And so these services are moving into holiday and tourist activities. Try on the 10th of December to find someone who will provide a service for a child who's disclosed because they've been prompted to by all the advertising around 15 days. You could knock your head against the wall and it would be easier. This then contributes to the increased vulnerability to further abuse, as unless the disclosures are promptly responded to, many children are punished for disclosure by the offender. Remember that 70% of all child abuse in this country is perpetrated in the home. So once the family knows a child has disclosed, that child is so vulnerable. And then children say to us, I'm not going to speak out again because the last time I was punished or this happened, they will try to negative consequences. It's easier just to be abused. Isn't that terrible? Perhaps children should be excluded from the 16 days of activism as a target group and more energy put into Child Protection Week, which usually falls in the last week of May, first week of June, when services, those that do exist, are better. Lack of trained personnel for children's services remains a challenge. There's simply not enough social workers, child and youth care workers to the amount of work that needs to be done. And I'm humanitarian who will take up the call to preserve and protect this most precious asset of our nation. So we at Childline are looking for all of you, as this very important committee. In conclusion, I just wanted to share a quotation from Gracia Michelle's commitment to children's issues long ago by husband Nelson Mandela is legendary. And I must say, on a personal level, when I begin to feel despondent about the issue of children in this country, I go back and try and get some proven strength from this particular quotation. I come from a culture in which traditionally children are seen as both our present and our future. So I have always believed it is our responsibility as adults to give children chances worth having. I've often been shocked and angered to say how shamefully we have failed in this responsibility. Children are precious gifts, which adults everywhere have a duty to protect. Political leaders make promises about the protection of children, but the important thing is that they should fulfill those promises. And I'd like to add to this quotation in my own head. We, the citizens of this country, have also the responsibility to hold our political leaders accountable to this performance. We voted in our parliament. We have to now hold everybody responsible for keeping to those promises. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I think it's such a precious opportunity that we've been given to come and talk to you. And we've got great hopes for the committee.
Thank you so much, Joe. I think it was a good idea that you would come back and report me. Then you get a glimpse of what is going on in the police service. I must say that sometimes it becomes a bit difficult for us as members of family. Here you are, you come and make a presentation before us. After your presentation, we are supposed to question you, get clarity on some of the issues. But in some instances, it's actually you people that should be questioning us. It's a kind of problem. I mean, everything you've said hits right into our faces as government, our representatives. And I think we'll have to, as a committee, take a very healthy stance, you know, of accepting all this. I mean, if one today, it's not the first time that we're hearing that, for instance, the Children's Act has not been implemented, and you ask yourself why. Some of the protocols that we are signatories to have not been implemented. So I think most of what you have said just hits right into our faces as government. But for now, let me give an opportunity to committee members to make their contribution on implementation, clarity on some of the issues, question some of the issues. We will take, let's say four hands, and then we'll respond, and then we'll have another round again. I'm going to go take my hand. Who's the second hand? Do you have a second hand? Honorable Sekana Robinson. Third.
We must convince you to utilize the community. But we must also say that in this, that is why it is together we can do more. Because I don't think that anywhere in the world where the government rules alone and it can do a complete of what is done. That is why we need so much of the society to also play its role and rule in the government. Because development is not just about the government, it's everything. I know the developed countries, in Germany, it is a German company that produces that kind of a company. So in essence, what I should say is it's all of us together having this country to make sure that this situation, the developmental state will achieve. For example, the government is not there on daily basis when things are happening in the society. And you guys are just educated on daily basis here in touch with society, children in particular. And as a result, you understand the operations there, they expect more than anybody, and that is why this feedback is very important. Now, the first, I want to ask two questions. In fact, I just want you to elaborate more. The first question is, you said your head office is in the hand because that is where most children are compared to all provinces. What is the total number of children? Now, we share an analysis where you give us the total number of the population of the children in South Africa and say to us, out of that population in all categories, some together, we think a very high percentage of children are in a bad state. This I'm mentioning because that's how Grasshopper Telecourt especially came to us. Look, the person in fact you can see the effect in society, but if we as a society keep on producing the type of human beings that is ultimately about us become criminals, civilized, then we're not taking the cost of the problem. And we cannot take the problem and do whatever that is the effect. They are treating the illness at the end, but not right at the root. So to deal with this group and tell us how many children we think, so that we know whether in another 20 or 50 years our society is still going to be destabilized by total instability. That we have. The second point is the most important. Is on this thing where the government must come in. If you say to us, out of 300, the child exits, out of 300 activities that are supposed to be there, only they could be looking at that, after paraphrasing. It will help if you say, if you have analysis, when you say, these are the problems in implementing, according to our experience, they are in province or local government or whatever. And these are the interventions that we like to do. Because unless you go to specific issues, and I say to you, the government doesn't spend that doesn't do. In other words, the government that is a society that is up in arms like you are, and it sits back in them and helps them because the experience in the things of the interview, they are experts, better experts than us here in Kalani. So I'm saying if there's an analysis where that says, look, with the 300 that are not implemented, it's not enough just to say 300 is not implemented. If you say this is what we think we can implement, this is it. We're not getting implemented because we think this is what is happening either in province or local government, and this is the intervention that we can make. That is definitely helpful. That will also apply to first of all, for example, the issue of prostitution, child prostitution. If you come out here and say to us, look, we think we shouldn't even talk about prostitution, but if you think it must be regulated because then the police will check the age and so on and so forth, that will also help us. But just to mention problems and let them lose it really doesn't help us. Because I'm saying to you, your integration, interaction with us, especially in terms of giving tangible, not abstract, tangible proposal of how we could intervene, that is the major advantage of the system.
Can I urge members to be able to cover the time allocated to us and go. I'm not in arms.
No.
four of them. Can you have your hand up? There's no big hand in the box there, Robin. About the former counselors who are not adequately trained. But I know what's happening in my constituency, but I would like to have a wider knowledge of what's happening elsewhere, so we can look at this at a national level. So I also appeal for further details so we can go in on it and try and make a difference. Obviously, we have to do the legislation and put that in place, but I think we can also be hands on. Thank you, Chair. Just want to thank John for the presentation to the University of Chicago. I don't know whether it's exciting or not, but it's going to be such a report for the new children. To some of us, we remember that because our children are the future. We can't protect these children without, we can't be a nation without a proper education to look after the children. I have three questions for them, so you can ask some too. What possible quality of the instruction that the best training? And there's a mention of field workers, social workers, and others. What stops them from not being involved in the and then the other one is the one of safety of caring at part four of the world. And then safety, it's just the 10% of the utilization. What quantity do you use? That's the question that I'm asking. The other one that I wanted to know is that what criteria was used for using a national office in Devon? And have you checked on other provinces the number of children that you can control?
Thank you, Chairperson. A long time. But I'll pick up some of the other committee members. That presentation of Joan, not what it's been. And I'm glad, you know, you mentioned all the challenges, because those are the things we will have to work on. My first question, I've got a question and then a comment, because it's not to you, is that, you know, when you look at the state of the nation of the people, we do have, you know, when it comes to the priorities, the key priorities of government, we do have an impact on the children. And those are things that we will work on and look at. Because I think it would be good if you go back to that to see what are the priorities and how they are used. But what I'm interested in You spoke about health. You spoke about, you know, the challenge that comes down to health, social development. You spoke to the police. But I'd like to know, overall, what is your relationship with the different departments? Because it seems that when it comes to children itself, it has cross-cutting effect on each department. So I'd like to hear what your relationship. And then, how would you like to see that relationship? Because that will help us too, when it comes to your challenges itself. Then when it comes to our children are going to take the examination, the grade 12. And we know that the stressful period for them. What is your update when it comes to incitement now during this period? Well, sometimes our children are suicidal, so I'd like you to answer that. And then when it comes to, like, the chairperson rightfully said, that is so difficult to push to me. But I think when it comes to our police service chairperson, there are certain things that child rights spoke to. For example, like the cases referred to them. On domestic violence, etc., from child lines to our police services. I think you speak to that, you know, in general, because there is a problem when it comes to rape cases. Because I can name a place, you know, where a person was told, that's when the person came, you know, to report the rape, come back to you again. You know, it doesn't work that way. And then the other thing too is your child protection unit. Because the Minister of Police Services or Police said that if you will, you know, they will not initiate but start with a unit again. So I think it will be good if you speak to the CPU. And then also debriefing the police when you speak. Do you get the briefing? Because sometimes there are terrible cases that happen, and when you ask the police commissioner, were the police debriefed? Then they said no, there's no debriefing to serve. Thank you. So those are the things that I speak, and then I have a question.
Welcome, you were in for short. Because you don't have a responsible and try to remove children out of the
question. Okay. I agree with the member of the committee. I'm not sure of names. We have to work together. And civil society has to work hand in hand with government, and we do try to do that. I have given the number of children in the earlier part of the presentation. Why are there some children so disadvantaged? I think we still haven't addressed some of the historical inequalities of the past in this and I think that there are some children who've always been left out in the cold in terms of services. And the problem is too, and this is perhaps maybe a practical suggestion to the committee, is those children who need to make their voices heard. If you're going to listen to the voices of children at the committee, it might be useful to go to some of the very remote areas rather than the central areas, despite the inconvenience. Because children whose needs have been traditionally overlooked are the children who don't have means to travel into the country, and so on. The problems for the implementation of the Children's Act are quite difficult to unpack because when we approach the Department of Social Development, there's a certain amount of lack of clarity about why. The regulations have held up the implementation as well as some other policy documents, but I'm not sure how much oversight this committee will have, but it might be useful for the committee to look at the budget allocation for implementation and to overview all the provinces with budget allocation. The Children's Institute of University of Cape Town and Exasa have done a budget analysis. But doing the budget analysis is not enough. We need to advocate for an improved budgeting activity for implementation in some of the provinces. I think also one of the big challenges is going to be training the entire system of children's services on the new Children's Act, because the training may hold the implementation unless that is fast tracked. So perhaps that could be monitored as well. Honourable Member talked about feeling overwhelmed. I think we are often overwhelmed as well. And over how do we manage with the resources that we have. We are going to try and get the money. We've been asked by numerous organisations to do case tracking. And I'm hoping that that will give us some idea of where the biggest trouble spots are, that we can come back to the community and say this seems to be an area that needs specific attention. I'm not sure what causes the inequality of subsidies other than these decisions are made at provincial level independently of other provinces, and so this is where the kind of provincial responsibilities kick in, or the provincial competencies kick in, that the provinces can make their own decisions about it. But it does trouble us in terms of equality. One, we have met office in Durban. Quite a difficult question to answer. KwaZulu-Natal is the province with the most children, the most problems in relation to children, the most challenges with the AIDS pandemic. Wherever our national office is, the function of the national office is to build competency in all our provincial offices. Wherever we are, we have to travel. It's also cheaper to run an office in Durban than it is in Johannesburg and Cape Town. More than offset I will go back to the destination for that. Our relationship with different government departments at a national level is actually very good. We do meet and we join the National Child Protection Committee. We have a good relationship with the new director of Oxfam Access Child, Mr. David Chabalala. And we do meet with the National Child Care Protection Forum. But one problem has been that the department in charge of those committees does not call regular meetings. So, for example, tomorrow is the first meeting this year of our National Child Protection Committee, which is supposed to be driving our integrated strategy on child protection, whereas on paper it's supposed to have four meetings, one every quarter. The national department says, you know, resourcing is a problem. But I'm going to be very frank here. When I see members of the department all driving to a luxurious conference venue in the East Rand in individual cars at 150 rand per round trip every morning, and then being picked up in the afternoon at 150 rand per round trip, and there are 10 different schedules, all with 10 different cars, and we're at an expensive conference venue, I think, what's happening here? Why doesn't anybody work out the logistics of this? We could have more meetings if they were run more economically. We don't have to meet coffee now. We can meet to 1 o'clock, half the time. You see, we only meet luxurious conference venues to resolve some of these problems. We can do it far more economically. Excuse my bluntness, but I think this is something that has got to be needed. And I have a special prize for the minister who hasn't gone out and bought himself a new car. It's human settlement. And it uses the old car. Perhaps that's rearrangedly played with each other with the intervention. During the plan period, yes, we get very concerned. We have a lot of concern around children who are very suicidal. Especially, it's not just to build up to families, it's to build up to where results come out. And over Christmas, our line runs 24/7. So we often, around Christmas, press, public press and community radio phones our various offices around the town, what things to have for learners during this stressful period, etc. So we try and give a lot of support during this period, which is a very stressful period for children. The Child Protection Unit, yes, we welcome the Minister's decision that the centralisation of the Child Protection Unit really resulted in a massive dilution and loss of skills. And we just hope that it's going to be rectified as soon as possible. Some provinces managed to retain, and Western Cape was one of the provinces in which the unit appears to continue functioning. But it can live in a town, it's been a disaster with the children. Yeah. Does that make sense?
All over the Sunday, all over the Citizen, all over the Dominican, all over the world. Thank you, I think my questions are going to be brief. I just want to check what are the programs that you are having as an organization or that you have put in place, especially in this like 2009 and 2010, to deal with the challenges, the challenges that you are having now, both in terms of prostitution, in terms of neglecting of children. And my second question is, how do you access the children in rural, deep rural areas, not in the metros, not in Germany, but in Germany, those who are living in deep rural areas? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Nixon, and thank you for the lively conversation with us here to us now. Actually, I've got a very disabled child who is mentally and physically disabled. So I'm very happy that you came with it, and I'm happy too because our chairperson has covered me, saying that you are the one who are supposed to ask us questions, actually. My question is, what's the relationship like with children with disabilities who have been late, especially those who are mentally disabled?
No, not working. Not working. Can you pass me that one? Can you please pass me that one? No, this one you have on the end.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have one question here. Also, thank you very much for the presentation. I'm sure that all of us members are well aware of everything that is in this document. I just want to know, how did you monitor these calls, for instance, to ensure positive outcomes? That is one question. And then, Chairperson, I'm going to allow myself to say that the child line that as the standing committee we are dedicated to the cause of children as well as the other targeted groups. And just to tell them that our mandate, the first of our mandate is to ensure that the executive, that we keep them accountable, and you can be very sure that we will do that indeed. And then lastly, Chairperson, what we must look at, and I'm sharing it in front of child line, is that in the 809 budget, when Dr. Swehia, our social development, the then minister, at the last quarter of the financial year, made available 500 million rand, which was divided between the 9 provinces. You know, I said that we must avoid doing things like that, because what it tells the public is that is this part of the political campaign? This was before the 2009 election. And I can promise you, in my constituency, which is Saldanha Bay, the people felt it because it just were people of specific political parties that had the opportunity to get a social relief of the stress payout. So, again, to Charles Lyon, we are dedicated as a standing committee to look at all these issues. Thank you.
Than others, and that depends on their ability to source funds within their province
The Department of Social Development, for example, does not fund the crisis line in KwaZulu-Natal, but it is funded in Gauteng and in Popo and North West. So KwaZulu-Natal has a very busy crisis line, but they've constantly, though, got to really scramble for funding to continue because it's quite a costly service to run. In fact, it was so costly to run that the national government, who used to run a child line, closed their child line. Child line, the NGO site, kind of took over from there. Accessing children in deep rural areas remains a big challenge. And a lot of our staff have to travel quite long distances. We do make a real effort, though, to go out to rural schools, especially the schools that we know children do not have cell phones. Because otherwise children cannot contact us. And the school programs often give children the opportunity to disclose problems in their lives. So we try and compensate with the school programs in those deep rural areas. The province that I think is probably most challenging with regard to rural areas, well, there are two that I can think of three. Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northern Cape are particularly difficult. And of course, we have quite limited resources. For example, we don't have a vehicle in Northern Cape. Our provincial director there has to either use her own personal vehicle or else sometimes staff go out in taxis, minibus taxis. And resources for us are a very big challenge. For example, the national office gets no subsidy whatsoever from government. We have to raise all the money for our national services through other means. Our relationship with children with disabilities. One of the sad things is Childline, South Africa, like other countries around the world, has higher levels of abuse against children who are disabled than able-bodied children. This is an international phenomenon that is supported by lots of research. We are very challenged when it comes to communicating with certain children who have disabilities. Those with intellectual disability, for example, cannot dial a telephone number. And so one has to work through their caretakers. We are hoping when we get the resources to promote the chat room and internet counseling with children who are hearing disabled, because hearing disabled children cannot get a telephone. So this is a project that we're trying to move into. Generally, though, we are quite challenged with children with disability, and it came up again last week in our training, our intersex training that we're doing in Peak America group, where police and prosecutors were saying to us, we find it so difficult to take statements from children with disability, and often they slip through the criminal justice system and are never protected because they lack the specialized skills. And maybe we could do more talking about that and seek some solutions together. In our training, we do give some input as to how to communicate with children with disability, but it's not enough. Provincial programs, I think I've mentioned. The issue with Northern Cape. Northern Cape was the last provincial office to be developed. And this was as a result of funding, and also being an NGO, we need a management committee in each province of volunteers who will work with us to establish an organization or a provincial call center. And in Northern Cape, that took a long time, but we have an incredibly wonderful provincial director there, Kuki Nkumadama, who I think will grow this office very quickly. But the challenge is that there are very few qualified people in Northern Cape. It's a problem. It's not a problem to which schools gravitate. Schools tend to gravitate away from Northern Cape. And the other problem, of course, is it doesn't have a tertiary education institution, which means that they don't develop their own pool of graduates who could do more in the way of the workcare. So that's an issue. I agree with you about the social workers. The other thing with social workers is their massive caseload. If I communicate with our colleagues in the UK, who are working on child protection programs, what would you say their average child protection care service is today? Maybe 30. So, and maybe some of our social workers are dealing with care service of over 300. You cannot offer an adequate service. And so what happens is a state of demoralization and withdrawal. The problem becomes overwhelming. So they retreat into the community, you know, in terms of occupation. We're losing a lot of social workers still to other countries because of the work situation here, and also to other occupations within the country, like a lot of them are going into industry because they get paid in the industry.
I think we have a resourceful perception. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some more than to respond to this. But on the issue of understanding, like in the sense of care, can we really justify as a government why that is done? Why should we understand when there's so much, you know, problems? I don't think we can justify that as government. And also on the issue of the lack of birth documents, there's no need for that. There's no need for that. We have our home affairs officers, we have members of parliament, we can assist in this regard. Perhaps we would need to have a better relationship with you. You could forward some of those cases to us, because most of us come from constituencies. I could deal with the bulk from my constituency, somebody else could deal with the bulk from their constituency. I mean, some of these issues can be solved immediately, they don't have to dread. But on that note, can you say thank you very much? But I would tend to sit and wait for after the service, and this is what they've got to say. But also when they make their presentation, and when they respond to some of the questions that have been asked, just kindly understand that it's not being asked to you and the colleague yet. It's just a general a question to the police service, so don't be sensitive and, you know, offended about that. Honorable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. One quick comment about the understanding. We have mentioned previously that we, the committee, are going to be more involved in the budgeting process, but I think we also need to be more so with the oversight. Mm-hmm. You mentioned libraries, and I know for a fact that the understanding in the library grant, the special additional grant that was created for libraries, was woefully understanding in the text. And I was personally involved in having that grant created together with the assistance of Mr. Manager. So it really upset and hurt me. The Western came to him with much better. But this is where we're looking at the competence and the administration. So I think we as parliamentarians have to hold our officials accountable as well. Make sure that the right people in position with the right skills so that they know how to deal with the budgeting, the administration, and the use of the money. Because it's great that money cannot be used when it is there, and then you think that the natural revenue stuff. But I think you've got a bunch of determined people here, and we need to do what we can to do this. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Chairperson, John did not answer my question. I asked how do you monitor the calls that come through to ensure a positive outcome.
Okay. We have a call tracking system that was originally donated to us by Telecom Foundation, and it's presently being revamped and rolled out to other programs in the other provinces. The call tracking system captures an enormous amount of detail relating to the call. What it does mean, though, is that we've had to train all our counselors on using computers. Now, a lot of our counselors are volunteers with minimal education, so that's been wonderful because it has empowered a lot of, usually women, to find skills that they wouldn't otherwise acquire. And they can then move on to better paid employment. Our volunteers are paid a small salary wherever we can afford it. So we can draw down those statistics. The program's being improved presently so that we can say which are the most problematic geographical areas, which are the most vulnerable age groups and so on. And the new edition of the program is being rolled out within this coming month. It is very complicated to
yes,
get the nine provinces done, but it's a very valuable program. And I know, before I stop, to just thank the committee for listening. You know, just to say, sometimes people feel quite despondent with the enormity of the problem, and it's so special to come and just feel the interest and the commitment of people around the table. And so that you've given us a special experience today. I'm very grateful for that.
You can indeed, and we will. The way September is to promise to the gentleman from the home of the book of human settlement before we go. You promise that you are going to give her a present by using what you think is a proper cap. Okay. So, could we give us an opportunity to the police service to give us their presentation as well? Before it came into operation, we were only permitted 3 months to carry on.
And what we did was we immediately started, and within that period trained 1,771 commanders and trainers from every station and area in the province. These trainers were responsible to train the remaining members and the members before the African Corporation. The training on the antivirus was also included and now forms part of the integral, an integral part of the basic training program for new recruits till 2000. So every new recruit is trained in the new antivirus legislation, the national instructions are expected of the state. And the further specialized 5-day course on the handling of the antivirus incidents was developed and implemented during 2005. The key person is just for the information officer that you can understand that as far as the antivirus training is concerned, this obviously also includes gender sensitivity training. Of course, remember, the majority of our police members are male. And therefore, it is important that they understand the sensitivity and the complexities of the social impact of the antivirus. We also have now more than 70% of all specialized members responsible for the investigation of family violence, child protection and sexual offences, related crimes, completed the specialised training, including training on the handling and investigation of cases in the more than 70% of them have undergone specialised training. At the moment, we are ready with some special training for all special conditioners in the country. But please, we have 1,063 police stations. Now, if you simply go out and train all stations, you can imagine what a mammoth. By the time that you end your training, you can see the final station or the final group of station commissioners, you find yourself in a position where a number of the others that you have already given your patient training have been replaced, either retired or promoted, whatever. So it's an ongoing process that we are doing. At the moment, we focus on our team, the Free State, the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, and the UNHL. We are now busy at the moment in the Mpopo, and we will thereafter move to the Mpumalanga, Northwest, and the Northern Cape. Our field service training continuously. And this for the information of members, an indication of the number of cases reported to the police during the 2005-2006 financial year. 86,390 cases were reported to the police. The next financial year, ending in 2007, 88,777. And in 2008, that went up to 95,000, basically 95,000 cases that are being reported. Now, if we look at the monitoring and evaluation of the incidents, in other words, how do we ensure that our members are actually complying with their obligations in terms of the act? We require our station commissioners and supervisors to regularly peruse and inspect all the registers. So, Chairperson, if you look at the register, you can immediately see what happened in the past 15 minutes and what the police official said, and whether it's just what was expected of. And we also require our station commissioners to keep resource lists of all the resources available in the community. I think reference during the previous presentation was very much in practice. This is the type of topic where we cannot, where the state alone cannot solve the problem. This is something where the community should be intimately involved in the process. And therefore, we require every station commissioner to find out what resources are available in his or her station area so that he can mobilize, get them together and see how they can make use of the assistance that is available within the organization. Once the case is reported to the police, immediately allocated to the investigation officer and detective, who will conduct a full investigation and then present the eventual material, the evidence that he has found, to the public prosecutor to take an informed decision whether to prosecute or not to prosecute. This is, of course, something which causes a serious cause. We find in the police that a very high number of cases that are reported to the police where domestic violence was involved. In other words, it was something that happened within a domestic relationship. Then eventually, when this matter, the public prosecutor decides to prosecute, or even before that, after the investigation, then the complainant will come to the police and say, I would like to report. Now, we all understand, and having the background of intimidation that is involved, etc., etc., and the social and societal pressures on the victims of domestic violence, we understand the difficulty, and we have a process in terms of which we also advise the public prosecutor of any information about our disposal which will indicate that we should get a person in the situation and what the victim is actually under pressure. Either the perpetrators, other family members, or the society, and then the legislation makes provision that only authorized public prosecutors are invited to the process. Any failure by a member to comply with an obligation is key only in terms of the act constitutional for that. It's interesting that the legislation specifically provides that the disciplinary proceedings must be instituted against the member to commit a criminal act in this regard, unless the ICD has directed others. So what happens is that a person lays a complaint to the police and a particular member does not comply with his obligation. The police then takes the proceedings. Is this a matter where we should be instituting the disciplinary proceedings? And if we decide yes, continue with the disciplinary proceedings and follow up. If we believe that this is a matter where we should not institute the disciplinary proceedings, we will then present the matter to the ICD with our recommendation and the reasons for the recommendation. And finally, the ICD will decide whether we are correct or not and whether we must continue. So it's an independent body. The ICD, of course, is an independent complaint director. Then, in view of the some of the complaints that we received, we have now actually activated our evaluation services with specific instructions that they evaluate or inspect the home services and police station. They must specifically confirm and report on the degree to which that particular organization is actually complying with the obligations to court. Now, before I move on to the next legislation, Madam Chair, I would like to make one point. In our training of police officers, we focus on gender issues, and secondly, the complexity of the problem of domestic violence. No chairperson. But it's so important because our workforce, our police members, the majority of them are male men. And that's understandable. That is something that happens all across the world. It's not something we can achieve with. Therefore, we have a specific responsibility to make sure that those members are sensitive to the. And I can assure you that we explain to members the fact that we are living in a society in South Africa, which is a male-dominated society. So it's important for us to make that decision. And we explain to them what is the impact of that on the situation of domestic violence. Because domestic violence is only about power and control. That's the only thing. And unless people understand that, eventually when we get to section of entry, I think I'm sure that the committee members will also be aware of that. These sexual offenses, as I said, are power offenses. That's what it's all about, power and control. And this is the message that we try to do. experienced through mere challenges as far as being involved. And I will refer to them later in the month. But we expect that the least patient initiative to get the information of all resources available in the community. All organizations, welfare organizations, state departments, etc. And then that patient commissioner must gather information. And he gives us his phone number after the hours, of course, in the case of child phone, that's not a problem. And he gives us an address. And he takes the child phone. And he takes the woman, mostly women, and he takes this victim to the shelter. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about shelter, chairperson, it is chairperson. I wonder whether members of this committee are aware that in the whole of the Republic of South Africa, there are only 60 own shelters. This is a very, very serious matter. This is a matter which obviously cannot be addressed, but we try and mobilize the community. And if I were to tell you and give you examples, I can teach you the teaching of Canada. To give you examples of how we try to overcome those difficulties. I can give you an example. For instance, in Philippians case some years ago, they had a station commissioner who actually got the members of the community so involved in the process of trying to prevent domestic violence that they actually offered to undergo a course of trauma counseling. And they actually succeeded in getting people to be very poor and actually succeeded in getting the money for those members of the community to undergo. And you know what? Of the 21 members that we sent to that country, or that offered and came to it, eventually only 17 completed. The only reason why the rest became so traumatized. It's a terrible And so we work very closely together with magistrates. There are instances where we have magistrates who can be so involved in the process of domestic violence that they really gain the absolute support. They come out late at night in order to assist the community with protection orders in order to assist the community. However, there are instances, and Madam Chair, I will be dishonest if I don't acknowledge, there are instances then we do not get that kind of support. And there are instances, obviously, where members of the police are not delivering that kind of support. That's truly necessary. There's no question. What we do is when we find and happen to report to us in this investigation, we find that it's okay. I explain to you that such an disciplinary action will be taken unless the independent complaint strategy, which is an independent one. We've got to move on to sexual offences legislation. This legislation came into operation on 16 December 2007. Now, Madam Chair, we thought the implementation of the domestic violence act would be a challenge. I can assure you, we have something in place. But the sexual offences legislation was a form of we have developed national instruction, once again, this was the Parliament, this is published in the event. So any member of the public can go and read exactly what must a member of the community do when they deal with a complaint of a sexual abuse. What can they expect in terms of services? And what can they do if that is not that kind of service is not available to those who need a complaint? The changes that were brought about. Well, first of all, the first chapter of this legislation deals with the issues and offences, what I'm reporting. Chapter 2 deals with sexual offences against males, when adult persons are the victims of offences. Chapter 3 deals with offences against children, and then in the next chapter, against mentally disabled persons. And chapter 5 deals with the HIV status. Make for example compulsory HIV testing of an alleged offender. And chapter 6 chapter 6 deals with the national identity of the children. And I will say something about that. Now, some of the major changes that were brought about is the provision for compulsory HIV testing of the elite sex abuse. I think that's very important. But we have to tell a number of difficulties. You can only have a person tested for HIV if you have a resistant or identified at least a person. You cannot say you must. But if the perpetrator is unknown, now it's of course important that in the case of offenses like rape, the majority of the offenders are known to the leader. So it makes it a little bit more complicated. Legislation provides for services conditions to the minimize stigmatization. It provides that the public hospital facilities must make available the post-exposure prophylaxis treatment in order to minimize the possibility of becoming HIV positive, and to then provide for the national register. You will know that this register is not in operation. It's a very good reason for it. So I think some of these things have already been verified elsewhere. So it's an overlapping and it becomes difficult. Now, if you look at the legislation itself, came into operation on 16 December, but it then repealed a number of common law things. The first one, rape, indecent assault, bestiality, and incest. Those offenses the way in which they existed before the death. Were abolished. They're no longer there. Now, you must understand that take very in mind how many of these kind of offenses are considered in the Republic of South Africa on a daily basis. Bearing in mind further that we have more than 160,000 members of the police service who are performing functionally, operationally, and we have been formed and trained to actually be able to make the switch over to the new kind of the police. This legislation creates more than 66 new offenses. It is great in some of the common law cases with its standard statutory cases, for instance in the case of rape, sexual assault, major difference between the new offenses and the old. It abolishes gender and age discrimination that prevails before the prison. It creates specific cases to protect children and mentally disabled persons. And replaces other legislation in the old sexual offenses. And then places a duty on people to report the commission of the sexual offense against the child or the disabled person. And that creates a lot of difficulty. While we support it, and we are being glad that this is part of the legislation and actually advocating this procedure, we find that in practice it causes a number of very strong difficulties. Especially in the case of people who are in a professional counseling relationship with the child. Now, if this child now discloses to the counselor that a sexual offense, something has happened which the counselor knows is a sexual offense, this counselor is now, by law, obliged to report it to the police. Now, you understand what impact that has on the confidentiality relationship between the counselor and the child. So it creates a system. We actually see them present assistance, guidance, and training to members of the profession. We don't want this to be removed from the legislation. Please do not misunderstand. But it means a complete mind change for those professional people. They must now learn how to deal with the victim that they are providing counseling to, in order to get that victim not to lose his or her trust in the counselor, despite the fact that he is reported. Furthermore, a counselor should actually get the victim to agree and to actually go with him to make the report, because that's the victim you want. The training on this new legislation is now also included in our basic training program for new recruits. And a course was developed for first responders to sexual offences. First responders, the first person arriving on the scene of a sexual offence. We've included this in our detective learning program at different levels, the basic level, the advanced level, and for our more specialized personnel. We also have a sexual offence investigator course and specialized training for our SDS members. That's the family violence, child protection, and sexual offence personnel. At present, we have a partnership between the new government and the police in respect of sexual offence training for investigating officers and first responders. So we get assistance from the new government. And then a UN-funded Women's Justice Empowerment Initiative was launched in 2005 for South Africa and three other countries in Africa. The purpose of this was to address challenges of sexual violence against women and enhance the capacity of local law enforcement, criminal investigators, prosecutors, legislators, and the media. Now, some of the initiatives that we're undertaking as part of the women's program that I just referred to. In 2008, the detective services, including forensic science specialists, were exposed to sexual offences investigative training. 12 courses were presented with 50 detectives each. And early in 2009, we went on a train-the-trainer program. We had 17 members who were trained in respect of the first responder force, in other words, 17 trainers who trained other members on that force. And 18 members of the investigative force, once again, trainers that go now going to members. Provinces are currently training 3 to 5 courses of 25 members each. Those people that we trained to present the training, they are now in the process of presenting those courses. And we are planning to present 43 of these courses with plus minus 25 units for the first reformer course and 63 in respect of the investigation course. All in all, plus minus 3,000 units are being trained with these financial. Then we move on to the children's act. Now, you can see here, the children's act is not an operation. Only children have been for the section of the operation. At the moment, we still work with the child care. But we are in the process of developing a comprehensive national instruction. Because if you compare the dispensation that was applicable to children in South Africa before the children's act comes into operation, and what it will be after that, there are certain major changes. And once again, we need to train all our members to work with our families, to deal with that, to be able to. The first thing that I can refer to is in terms of the existing legislation, a child in need of care can be dealt with in a certain way. For instance, a child may be removed from place to place and have to stay. Now the legislation refers to the child in need of care and protection. Is an additional place. And in the case of the police, we may only remove the child in terms of the new dispensation if the child sees the child in need of care and protection and in need of emergency protection. Now, Madam Chair, try and explain that to me. If the child is in need of care and protection, I can assure you, as a police officer, I am. But why? In need of immediate emergency protection, it becomes very difficult to see what further must be required. If you find a child in a certain house and you find that there is no food in there, but the child is alive, it's not starving, it's not lying in bed. Obviously, the child is in the care and protection. but if the child is needed in immediate emergency protection, we have decided to keep an element that such a child is actually in immediate emergency protection. Obviously, the best interest of the child, enshrined in the Constitution, will always be the guiding policy. Now, once again, this legislation places an obligation on the agency to report that the child is abused or neglected. It must be reported to the agency. If they fail to do so, then they will be apprehended. There's also an obligation on a designated child protection organization or a provincial department of social development to report any offense against the child or the children's activity. And there are detailed principles in this legislation on how to deal with children who are in the field. We are now in the final stages of that national function and I can ensure you have a chair. To try and interpret this and make it practical rules and instructions so that our members will understand exactly what it is. In the process of developing this legislation, the South African police requested, and indeed, the Parliament agreed, because it was included in the legislation, that we don't want a situation that where a child is, for instance, molested in the house. In the past, the requirement was the police will remove the child. And now the child must go into a different environment. But why so? The child is a victim. The child was a perpetrator. So we request the Parliament, and Parliament agrees, we will now get the child to remove the alleged offender from there. So that the child can stay in there. For the rest of the family, but will not be exposed to the family. It makes provision for children who are victims of trafficking and any death of a victim, a child victim in the care facility must be reported to the police. We have to investigate it. It prohibits for an incident. The employing persons who are unsuitable to work with children. Now, I'm not going to say anything about that. I think sometimes already raised. And then the permissive police is called a legal responsibility by to require a parent to actually perform the functions of the parent. And now, Madam Chair, with your mission, I will hand over to you. The Child Justice Act, she's the one in charge of the development of the legislation.
The need is cooperated.
Yeah.
And we don't try and move the school.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The speech of it has been involved in the development of the Child Justice Act with other role players for the past 10-12 years. It is envisaged that the new Child Justice Act will be coming into operation on the 1st of April next year. And as the Commission already indicated, that once again, the Act requires that the national instruction will be issued by the National Commission, and we are believing that. What is important in terms of the Child Justice Act is that a complete new criminal justice system for children in conflict of the law is established. Research has indicated that children should not be dealt with in terms of the criminal justice system. Currently, experience indicates that, if anything, the criminal justice system makes children more severe criminals than when they first enter the system. What is also important is that the minimum age of criminal capacity of children is raised from 7 years to 10 years. A child below the age of 10 is still not a criminal, it's a child in care of need and protection. And as a result of that, the social mechanisms provided for in terms of the Children's Act is a better option, and therefore this child should not be punished for such conduct. It also provides for the diversion of matters away from the criminal justice system, where children can undergo programs that teach them skills, that also train them on the conduct that they committed, and also to teach them on why they should not continue with that. The notion of restorative justice is also included. What is very important is that children should not be seen as getting away with unlawful conduct, but they should be held accountable in a manner that teaches them responsibility. Something like symbolic restitution to the victim is very important, where the child actually has to give up something that is important to him, to the victim, so that he can take responsibility for the conduct. And it also assists the victim in the healing process of the offense that was committed against him. The Act also provides that children below the age of 10 years cannot be arrested. Once again, such a child should rather be dealt with as a child in need of care and protection, and the police should not get involved or arrest the child below that age. The police service do not want children in police cells. Police cells are not a place where children should be kept. It's traumatizing for children, and it's a place where criminals should be kept, not children. And therefore, arrest is also provided for only in limited circumstances, and the Act provides for alternative placement in places where children will be safer than police cells. The Act also provides for conditions of detention when a child is indeed detained in limited circumstances. They must be kept separate from adults, and gender should also be kept apart. They must also be taken into account their particular vulnerability, and visits by parents, legal representatives and so forth should be afforded, and this will also be addressed in the national instruction that we are drafting at this stage. The Act also provides for a specific procedure when a child sustains injury or is in fact traumatized in detention. There is a procedure that must be followed where the state commissioner must ensure that the child receives emergency or emergency treatment and to stop the traumatization of the child. And certain procedures must be followed so that that is also reported to national level, the fact that the child was in fact treated, or if he failed to do so, the reason for that. And then lastly, expungement of records is provided for in the Act. When a child who is young does commit a thing, we don't want that child to be, we don't want that offense to be held against the child for the rest of his life, and therefore expungement are provided for so that the child can in fact start with a clean slate and continue his life in civil society as a responsible person without that hanging over his head for the rest of his life.
Thank you. Right, on how well these authorities will live until the
and to support the workers in their communities. The other example, there was with the Prevention Health Department in the Eastern Cape that adopted prevention legislation. There was a very trusty recipe to ensure that that legislation is enforced, but also that we continue to carry those measures in our climate awareness program with the community. The company that currently busy with the Prevention Community-based workshop, where they will exceed the area of the beach, problems that are experienced in chat and practices, they're trying to offer medical problems in chat and practices. Then I think just a lot of this, we want to have respect and regard for traditional practices for culture of our community. But we primarily we are the most important agency that must ensure that we're always enforced. So we need to balance that, and I think that's where it's very important that the police don't have any disadvantages to their community as well. I think on top here in the section, we can hold up a new meeting and we're going to cover all these issues, so I want to thank you for listening to yourself.
Again, yes, one of our challenges is to continue to present the data and to continue to give the patient data. Again, we are living in a society, as I explained earlier, which is a male-dominated society. This is the way that we are brought up, that we bring our children. And therefore, if our members are living in this world, they are exposed to it. And even if you sensitize them, you say, don't change the person's mind overnight. Over time, this person falls back. Once again, become a male dominator. It is a male dominator. And you need to refresh and strengthen that training continuously to ensure they are sensitive. We also find, Madam Chair, that there are difficulties as far as the awareness programs are concerned. Our communities are not fully aware of all this legislation. And in fact, most of our communities actually do not understand all the technicalities surrounding this legislation. And they sometimes come to the police station, and then they are very unhappy with the police when they apply the law. Let me give you one simple example. In terms of this legislation, if a sexual offense is committed in the staff, it must be reported. If you do not report it, you are guilty of an offense, and may be sentenced to 5 years in prison. Now imagine that, Mr. Chair. You arrive home early one day, and you find your teenage daughter between the age of 12 and 16, and her boyfriend involved in a compromising position. That's a sexual offense against the child. So now you must have a report. At the same time, the legislation makes provision if the National Director of Public Prosecution decides to prosecute any one of the two children, he must prosecute both of them. So you are now taking your child to report this to the police. Well knowing, well, in fact they don't, they only find it out when they get to the police. Well knowing that when you get there, eventually your child may be convicted of nothing. So these are some of the differences, and we will carry on with the rest of the differences. But we also experience this challenge, this proper coordination between the different states, but it's like two charts now, and it's a problem to us. We try and work together with the department, but you know, and I suppose they will say exactly the same about the police. People are continuously moving around. People are transferred, people are retiring, people are promoted out of their position. So every time you have new people, you must now get involved in the organization. And then a very serious problem. Now this is not a police problem. As far as the police are concerned, we are available 24 hours a day. But very few of the other operators that's the problem. So when in the middle of the night you need to sit and do the search in proper counseling, very few of them are in a position, understandably so, because of the difficulty in the funding, etc., to have somebody available to assist themselves.
So that is basically the type of challenge that we are facing. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Reverend.
And secondly, could you tell us why is this national register for sex offenders not yet operational? What is the reason for that? I don't want to talk much, just let me know that you say four questions like the end of the phone, then the response. But remember, you have to be sensitive about time. Look at our time. It's quite limited. The time is short to you. Very, very straight to the point. If you have Honorable Dorothy, Honorable Tinkaya, Honorable Robertson, Honorable Cicello, and you can stop there, then you will have another 50 round again.
I think the document that was presented in talking about the domestic violence, where we've got the statistics about 2005 and 2006. Firstly, I just want to say, you know, it's important to say of the number of cases. Okay. How many were there? And within what is the transcript? Within which time are you able to deal with these offenses? For some of them, there are cases that are, you know, unfortunate for the day because of not being attended. I don't think this is helpful to say 2005, 2008, so many cases. Why is this information? And in the system. You don't even know where they were deported, how many were dealt with, what, you know, I think this is very good. It's just like not having any information, it's not helpful at all. And then it goes to all other cases, you know, where you have given us the numbers. You don't know. The exact number of cases that were deported, how many were dealt with, the time frame. Some of them, you know, they are there for years and years. They are not there. And I think it would be helpful for us to get that kind of information.
Yeah, the first one about community policing forum. It was mentioned to bridge the gap between the police and the community. Don't they have a role there? You haven't spoken much. Two, the training, we do acknowledge it is important, but you seem to come across as somebody who says that there's promotion, there's a group that you don't want to be promoted. So the question is, don't you think with the training that you the police are having an impact, are you then saying there's no impact, there's no difference? And what do you suggest should be done?
The 24-hour service to the left thereof was mentioned. So you said that there was some that was placed in the good in the car, but in the car. Do we have any system in where you have people on call? That there's a rotation system. If not, I suggest that might be something worthwhile. And then there's reference to sexual offenders. You talked about schools and so on that have, you know, if you're employing somebody, they need to be checked. But what about ETV centers? What about informal pressures and so on? Is that sort of thing registered or checked on them as well?
Informal
pressure, Yeah, your people just looking after others. Do you know whether those people are competent and fit for the job?
Thank you, Jefferson. Just coming straight to improving facilities, I would just like to know, are these improved the disabled patients also? That's my question. And then the other question is about a crime reported trauma and abduction. Can't we get a current figure, or is this done yearly? Because I see 2728, but they told the number 209.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me start with the last question. The training allocation, we do not have training allocation for specific. Well, we have for every course, we have each a budget with that. But I do not have that information that I was told. As far as the first question is concerned, Madam Chair, you asked the question about the sexual offense register. The sexual offenders register is something which is for the department of justice, but we are working very closely together with them to develop computerized systems so that the police computers can talk to the computers of the department of justice because they have been talking to the people in the offense. But we are working with that. But I can give you an indication that the budget required in order to develop the Mexican system is something in the region of 300 million rand. Okay. Yeah. We have the system in a condition so that it can run effectively. Because if the person comes, you must be able to put his thumb on the machine, and then that machine is able to tell you whether the person's name is here. In other words, if it is the name, you know, you must identify by the name. Then you asked a question about how many cases reported to the police. What do we mean by that? We mean exactly that. These are cases reported to the police in respect of which a detective was appointed, in respect of which an investigation was conducted, and in respect of which those cases were referred to the court. In some of those cases, the victims actually withdrew the case in the process, but we as police cannot stop the investigation on the counter case. It must go to the public prosecutor to say yes, it's stop the
prosecution. In other words, they are saying that the question of fact and right, or the member, is that you are not responsible for the prosecution of the case.
No.
It should be in the hands of the justice system. So you wouldn't have the numbers as to how many cases are processed.
Madam, the numbers that we provide you with are only numbers of cases that were processed.
Processed?
Yes. They were processed. It does not mean that every one of them resulted in a court case, or some were withdrawn. In some cases, the public prosecutor may attend the insufficient but they were perceived by the police.
Do you think that
That is actually a combined. We have to get the figures from the Department of Justice. We have to get the figures from our own systems. Our system should actually display
what happened and justice as well. So we should ask, it should be possible to get this information. But this is not something which is regularly reported, so therefore we have to develop programs to access the data on our systems and then come up with a report. So it's possible, man, that you have any questions as well.
Yeah, I think it is possible. I know I have done something on that. I went to Mountain Life Police Station to check as to how many cases there were done and they were able to find
Madam Chair, then the Community Police Forum, we work very closely together with Community Police Forums. We have almost at every police station. I think it's now more than 90% of all police stations.
Is the problem 156
and
is currently active,
or the problem 156 in the session? There are a few police stations that we have actually done. This is where we have the partnership with the community. This is the majority of instances where we have so-called trauma counseling or the victim support rooms and so on. We get assistance from the TPS to develop that. And sometimes they will even sponsor the material, and in some instances, they will make available volunteers to come and assist the trauma debriefing, the initial debriefing, and sometimes we also assist, or they also assist us with friends, our members, in order to do that basic initial debriefing of the victim, which is the process. The question was about the training, etc., and we say that people are promoted. Do we say they should not be promoted? And are we suggesting that there is no impact of the training? No. There is a huge impact of the training. And I wish I could have this committee present at one of those training sessions and see the impact that it has on the people. However, you must understand that if you train people, and this is very important, to ensure gender sensitivity, I said, they go back into the society, which is still male dominant. It fades away. Over time, we must do some refresher training. And, man, I apologize, I'm a male person. And I'm talking about males, not you. They are specifically the people that you need to continuously remind.
It's
a process, you need the mind change, but it's not a one time and it's forever. It takes time. The impact is really, we can see the impact. Obviously, there are people that do not show exactly the same impact, but that is something that could be expected for anyone.
These men are hot.
Some of them, man. But they have also come up for the male. There are some women that are also very hot. The question was after having that remark of mine that sometimes magistrates will be available, he will even make himself available to come late at night. Yes, ma'am, there is an agreement between the Department of Justice and the police. They give us the names of people that are involved to actually issue domestic violence protection order late in the night, so that is possible, it happens. However, when you have a small cell, there's only one magic. Now, you cannot have a list, a standby list, because that list will have one name, and the magistrate is the only one on it. And tomorrow morning, the magistrate is the only one that can run the court. So there are areas where there are challenges, I must admit. As far as the sex offenders, to ensure that they will not be working with children, that is a different register, as pointed out by the Charge 9 people. That is a different register. They requested it should actually be one register, the two registers, and we actually supported that, but Parliament in Britain decided otherwise. So that is a separate register that is the Department of Social Development, kept by the Department of Social Development. Once again, we give the support for that system. We provide the information of previous convictions, etc., and they keep certain information. And once again, computer systems that must talk to one another
although this one is a little bit less expensive than the other one, because we started it a long time ago, it will not require that much money at this time. And then as far as improving our facilities for the disabled people are concerned, madam, we have a process where every police station is evaluated. They are all on a program. Obviously, it cannot be done in 1 year. We are in a process. We've laid down certain minimum standards with regard to accessibility. In other words, people suffering from different kinds of disabilities into a police station to enable them to communicate with the police. And obviously, and very important, is that mission facilities must also be offered. We are involved in the process to do that. All new police stations that are designed and built already have this at a minimum standard as part of the project. The question was asked about the numbers for 2009. You will notice that in all the cases where we gave numbers, and I apologize for not mentioning it, we are talking about financial year. It means 2005, 1 April to 31 March 2006. We're talking about financial year. The last financial year, in respect of which we've given you information, is 2008, end of March 2008. We cannot give you information for 2009. Because there is a whole process that must be gone through in order to verify the statistics and to actually ensure the correctness of those statistics with audits and specific sample tests, etc., at the station, in order to ensure that the fault factor in the statistics is rectified. That then goes to the National Commission, and once that is approved, it is released. We are not yet at that point for 2009. So unfortunately, I cannot give you the number with any reliability. Thank you.
I don't think the question that I would like to ask the police service will be able to be answered now. Because I think what is important for us to know is what is your budget overall when it comes to violence against women and children. Not the facility, but you know the budget, how much is given. Because the money is into training, money is into other things, but we have to know to see if you can do your work effectively and efficiently. And I think also to influence the budget, as Mr. Robson spoke about, Honorable Robson spoke about earlier. And then what is important to the other question that I would like to ask is how do you measure the impact of your work on the community? Because that would be important for them. And then you didn't confirm the CPU, because the minister said it was introduced, but you didn't say when was introduced. Then I think just a comment for you, ma'am. When it comes to the expungement of records, I must say, Chairperson, it is really impressive. And we have experienced it in the Eastern Cape. So we have important things that come from the One Stop Youth Justice Centre. And yes, and Rock getting down by Trinary now. And the thing is, and I know that the United Kingdom, they would like to introduce this concept. Because the person that started was the project manager, is now in the United Kingdom. And they asked us to start with this process. So we have to congratulate you on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Recently, there was a visit to Eastern Cape, a different department, which was there was a visit to Eastern Cape, by different departments, different departments.
Yeah,
the
So I just wanted to check all what are the outcomes of the investigation. You can brief us what are the outcomes of the investigation and what plans are you making in place to deal with the incident that will be of the good time, and how is the department going to monitor this issue?
Chairperson, yes, I just want to make mention of the fact that we in the country only have two forensic laboratories. That is quite concerning, and I cannot quite understand when we talk about improving the criminal justice system. I would like to hear the remarks of that on that. And then you also talk under victim support. You talk about improving facilities at police stations. I would like to know in the rural areas how many of the police stations do in fact have these victim empowerment programs. And then lastly, to ask how much has been allocated for training officers in terms of dealing with matters pertaining to women.
Thank you.
integrated justice system, we're looking specifically at the ICT system, that the community work together and improve our practical throughout the system, sharing information between the partners, so that we can also get some of the information that we've now asked for in a much easier way. And there's a number of examples in this regard, how community support works together, how we provide the evidence, the improvement also to the criminal record team, so that we can provide the information for the research that has been made. I think it's a very broad project that's being developed, not just by the police, but nationally by the Department of Justice.
We need
to have it as well.
Okay, then the victim support facilities at the police station, I have to break down meeting for how many of these facilities are in which stations were problems, and I do not have a breakdown of which stations I see, but I can certainly provide that. We've got that. And then you can see which of the stations are in rural areas or not. It's a fairly wide spread at the moment. But we do find, as Simon has just indicated, that we have places in the Western Cape much more facilities than some of the other provinces. It is something that the police are working on to increase the one institution in the city, but increasing the number of victim facilities at the police station, including the rural areas.
Yes, I was here. There was a question concerning rape. Excellent question, difficult answer. The reason for that is a new sexual offences legislation came into operation on 16 December 2006. And now you have to look at what rape was before 16 December 2007. And then you need to look at what rape is thereafter. But if you look at the two tracks, it's two totally different rights. The old rape is one that has to be committed by a man on a woman. Now it can be committed by a man on a woman on another man, or by a woman on another woman, or by a woman on a man. So you can immediately see how a large number of different rights suddenly became rape. So if you want to compare the new rape statistics, in other words, the statistics of reported rape cases after 16 December 2007 with the old one, it is inevitable that there will be a huge difference. Because the number of instances where in the past it amounted to indecent assault now constitute rape. So, exactly for that reason, it's extremely difficult to make any comparisons and it's therefore dangerous. But our people who are analyzing these statistics are looking at ways of and means of getting the statistics available in a way which will make it comparable. So that there are certain rules according to which you have. You will actually only be able to make definitive deductions from statistics once you have two full financial years after the new legislation came into effect. The further difficulty we have, I explained, we are, what is it now, almost 180,000 police members that we had to inform and make aware of the new legislation. So inevitable, there were instances where people still registered old crimes and that had to be investigated and rectified, and we are still in the process of changing it. Some people that registered common law rape cases, that cases must be changed to actually write in terms of the new legislation. Some cases that were still registered as assault should have been changed to rape. So we are still in the process of auditing and verifying. So that is a huge thing. If you take into account the 1,060 police cases.
The last question was the question on do we have programs where we educate the youth about crime prevention? The answer is we do. There's a lot of programs. I won't be able to go through them. With any police station, based on specific crime trends, we do that with the community. So we identify specific risk issues and then they will engage with the community. We see the schools, we look at the older programs, we see the schools, we look at the there's a myriad of these community outreach and awareness programs that have been from the station.
I'm not saying that the training is different from police station to police station.
But the
I have heard the concern about that we raise awareness, I mean, we don't have the certain place to do this. And as we start to speak to youth and youth and people providing children and youth for their and it's often from the national area to provide specific content that we ask to be stated to youth so that they all use the same method. And we also provide them with information material on our internet so that the youth agents can access the same at same method for these campaigns. So it would be the first conversation to state and based on specific needs. And also they can work with their ministry forums and with their sector forums, which is very effective for them.
Although we don't use t-shirts and caps, when we work with the children, we give them pens, rulers, and
erasers. I think criminal is a huge problem when you talk about the step of the latest of the junior step. I know it is a huge problem that we have of the problem, but the huge problem should not take years. At some stage we need to start.
And I think that is important that you should know, because it follows up with that. But you can't just do something.
How do we measure our impact? We have what we call a performance chart. Eventually, we can see that the crime that station either comes down, where we have special programs, we have awareness programs, etc. So that's the way we measure it. We also measure it, obviously, in larger groups, clusters of countries, and because crimes don't have borders. The problem is you need to sometimes cross the station area. We need the clusters, provinces, and people in the world. But there are a range of groupings together that we take into account to determine what effect it has. Mm-hmm. In that manner, we identify certain police stations that we call priority police stations. Mm-hmm. Because in that area, specific crimes are very, very prevalent. So now we have a special program for that. Now suddenly you find that those crimes go down. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, it often results in a displacement. So now suddenly your neighboring station is going to see a problem. So therefore, normally we plan our operations in such a way that it will not be easy for criminals to now simply transfer or relocate to other areas and continue. So we try and make it difficult. We have combined programs. So there are different measurement tools in this. But the main and basic one is the performance chart.
Thank you. Are we on time now? Could we then say thank you to Childline and to the police service? We will start the first one, Mr. Lam, thank you, sir. And then commercial and feedback. I'm quite emotional from childhood, but I think we've gained a lot, and we will have to digest what you have said to us. We have to check on the issue of the campaigns that you spoke about, whether they include the scene or other civil society with us. We need to check whether there was something that exists or not. If, I mean, if there's an impact on the campaign, cut and you know, take another room, I agree with you. But you will check whether what you say is justified. On that note, I think we could review the research and the child violence as well. We will keep in touch. Thank you for that.
I'm okay. I'm okay.